106.6.
That was Fine Young Cannibals with Johnny Come Home. And you're listening to, I'm Dom Robinson, you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. And we're on 106.6. And it's a new weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games, plus the charts, look at what's new on TV, and news for all three. Now, DVDfever.co.uk is a non-profit website of mine, which has recently had a revamp, so please take a look. And if you've got anything to say about anything you hear on the show, please get in touch via the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDfevershow. Now, we've got coming up in the first hour, because we have films in the first hour and then video games and TV in the second hour. First of all, in this hour, we've got a review of The Lincoln Lawyer. Then we've got the top 10 movie charts. Then we've got a list of all the new cinema releases that are coming out, including the new Planet of the Apes film. And then new DVD releases. Oh, and also some film news. But first I'm going to give a mention about my podcast, which I'll post up on the Facebook page later on as well. Because basically it's sort of got a mention on BBC's Click programme. Because 2 weeks ago they had a piece from LJ Rich about podcasts and asked people to send in their thoughts about what they think makes the best podcast. And I tweeted to them that, I think mine makes the best one. And I knew it was going to be featured in the show beforehand, with Spencer giving a tongue-in-cheek sarcastic response, which was, well, of course you do, Dom. Anyway, I've put a link to the Facebook page on that, so you can have you can see all that in all its glory. But first up, we're going to have a review of The Lincoln Lawyer. Now, when I first heard about The Lincoln Lawyer, I thought, what? Matthew McConaughey is a lawyer? Again? It's been 16 years since The Time to Kill, and with the cover on show, I just thought this would be the kind of performance he'd just phone right in without a care in the world. But I was wrong. And when I saw the trailer, I thought that after all that time since I saw him as a lawyer, he hadn't aged at all. But you can certainly see he's looking a lot more ragged now. Anyway, in the movie itself, we see that as Mick Haller, he's not the Dudley Do-Right of the legal profession as he was back then, but he's more of a sleazy type, with most of his time spent racking up fees from bog-standard crimes such as drunks and narcotics possessions, while occasionally turning a blind eye to things that aren't quite as legal as they should be, as long as it gets the job done. And that's not just down to something as simple as you see at the start, where when he enters a courthouse and needs a case that's due to come up later in the day to actually happen as soon as possible, hence bribing the bailiff. Because he's got to get across town to deal with a possible assault case that's been brought to his attention by his contact at the court, Val Valenzuela, played by John Leguizamo. Louis Relay, Ryan Philippe, is accused of going to a woman's apartment after picking her up in a bar and beating her up on arrival. Excuse me. But he tells a completely different story when running through it all with Haller, in that she attacked him. As they discuss it, both scenarios are played out on screen like a flashback, so the viewer has no idea which one is correct, which is a nice touch. Certainly something different than you don't normally get from films. Then the main case itself mixes in with other seemingly inconsequential cases which get mentioned along the way, and with a number of twists and turns along the way, who can Mick Haller trust? However, there is one twist and turn too many towards the end which just doesn't make any sense at all. Obviously I'm not going to reveal it here, but anyway. As for the title, it's because he drives a Lincoln car. Well, he doesn't drive it. He has a chauffeur to do that for him. He took on Earl to drive him wherever he needs to be, because he lost his license. But now he has it back, it's much easier to keep Earl on so he can use the car as his office and work on the go. In addition to this, his number plate reads NT Guilty, even though it's clearly artistic license. It's actually one extra character than is allowed on a license plate in Los Angeles. Now, shot in LA and with some gorgeous backdrops, the film does understandably spend a great deal of time in the courtroom. And it's been quite some time since I saw a film do that, but it does make for an engaging watch in this case. Many other films might have not fared so well, but this one is superbly directed by Brad Furman, who's one director I haven't come across before. In the acting states, McConaughey puts his all into the film, as does Ryan Philippe, and there's good support from Josh Lucas as the lawyer for the prosecution, Tim Minton. However, no one else really pushes the boat out here, including William H. Macy as Mick's investigator, Frank Levin, and Marisa Tomei as another prosecuting lawyer, and also Mick's ex-wife. I'm inclined to give this film a 9 out of 10, because it all works together so well and never disappoints, except for one moment towards the end, but that's just a brief blip. Overall, this is definitely a must-see. Okay, there's your review of The Lincoln Lawyer there. And in a moment, we're going to be having the movie charts. But first of all, in a moment, we're going to be having Third World with Now That We Found Love. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now, in this section, we're going to be having a look at the movie charts, which at the top includes a couple of films that are actually coming out over here. Because, well, basically, I go through the American movie charts because of, well, I mentioned before, the UK ones just don't seem to be available anywhere these days. But the first two that I'm mentioning, I say they're coming out this week in the UK. So, first one, number one, and only taking $54 million. Normally, I mean, I think the Hangover took over $150 million in its first week. So, not doing drastically well for its first week. We've got Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Now, Will Rodman, James Franco, is a San Francisco scientist who has been trying to develop a cure for Alzheimer's disease by testing a genetically engineered retrovirus on chimpanzees. The virus mutates the chimpanzees, giving them a human-level intelligence. One of his test subjects, a female chimpanzee, goes on the rampage because she believes her baby, to whom she secretly gave birth, is threatened. She's killed after disrupting a board meeting. Will's boss, Stephen Jacobs, David Oelio, orders subordinate Robert Franklin, Tyler Labine, to put all the test chimpanzees down. But he cannot bring himself to kill the chimpanzee's baby, and instead gives him to Will, who names him Caesar, who's played by Andy Serkis, and raises him in his house. Caesar has inherited his mum's high intelligence and learns quickly. Will gives a sample of his cure to his father, Charles, played by John Lithgow, who is suffering from Alzheimer's. And at first his father improves, but later his body's immune system fights off the virus and his dementia returns. In his dementia, Charles gets to his neighbour's car and damages it, angering the neighbours. As he threatens Charles and pushes him down, the onlooking Caesar attacks him. After the incident, Caesar is forced to leave Will's house and is held in a San Bruno primate facility run by Brian Cox. The apes are treated cruelly by Landon's, well, it's Brian Cox's son, Dodge, Tom Felton, who works as a guard there. Caesar is initially treated poorly by both of the staff and the other apes, and when Dodge brings his friends into the facility, one of them gets too close to Caesar's cage and is grabbed by Caesar, who steals his pocket knife, later using it to escape his cell. Caesar then frees a gorilla and with his help gains dominance over the other apes. Now, watching the trailer, for me, it plays out exactly as you'd expect. And it just, I don't know about you, it just doesn't grab me at all. I mean, it certainly can't be any worse than watching Tim Burton's version back in 2001, with Helena Bonham Carter probably not needing any makeup at all. And that film just plodded along for 2 hours and just served to be predictable and boring. For those who are interested by this new film, though, it gets a release on this Thursday in the UK. Number two, we've got the Smurfs. When the evil wizard Gargamel chases the tiny blue Smurfs out of their village, they tumble from their magical world and into ours. In fact, smack dab in the middle of Central Park. They take shelter with a young married couple, Patrick and Grace Winslow, who are expecting a baby. Now the Smurfs must get back to the Middle Ages and stop Gargamel. Just three apples high and stuck in the Big Apple, the Smurfs must find a way to get back to their village before Gargamel tracks them down. Now, the film stars Hank Azaria as Gargamel, and Neil Patrick Harris and Jemma Mays as Patrick and Grace Winslow. And from the trailer, a cat talks, Smurfs use the word Smurf as opposed to a swear word and also as a verb, and it's full of little CGI Smurfs. Anyone who's listened to the show for a while knows my opinion on CGI films, and that won't be changing with this one. Kids will like it, adults might have to tolerate it, but I'll be giving this one a miss. Either way, it also gets a cinema release in the UK from tomorrow. And down to number three, we've got Cowboys and Aliens. And this, last week in the US, the Smurfs and Cowboys and Aliens tied for first place. But this week, the Smurfs took $21 million and Cowboys and Aliens $15.7. And Cowboys and Aliens, it's the Old West, where a lone cowboy leads an uprising against a terror from beyond our world, 1873, Arizona Territory. A stranger with no memory of the past stumbles onto the hard desert of Absolution, of Absolution. The only hint to his history is a mysterious shackle that encircles one wrist. What he discovers is that the people of Absolution don't welcome strangers, and nobody makes a move on the streets unless ordered to do so by the iron-fisted Colonel Dollarhide, played by Harrison Ford. It's a town that lives in fear, But Absolution is about to experience fear it can scarcely comprehend as the desolate city is attacked by marauders from the sky. Screaming down with its breathtaking velocity and blinding lights to abduct the helpless one by one, these monsters challenge everything the residents have ever known. Now the stranger they rejected is their only hope for salvation. As this gunslinger slowly starts to remember who he is and where he's been, he realizes he holds a secret that could give the town a fighting chance against the alien force. With the help of the elusive traveller Ella, Olivia Wilde, he pulls together a posse comprised of former opponent townfolk, Dollarhide and his boys, outlaws, and Apache warriors, all in danger of annihilation. United against a common enemy, they will prepare for an epic showdown for survival. The cast features Daniel Craig, Clancy Brown, Sam Rockwell, and Keith Carradine. And from the trailer, what starts off looking like a typical Wild West film soon changes halfway through when the aliens arrive and start shooting up the place. It does look actually quite intriguing, so I think I'll check that one out. Also near the top 10 this week, going straight in at number 4, we've got The Change-Up. And growing up together, Mitch, Ryan Reynolds, and Dave, Jason Bateman, were inseparable best friends. But as the years have passed, they've slowly drifted apart. While Dave is an overworked lawyer, husband, and father of three, Mitch has remained a single, quasi-employed man-child who has never met a responsibility he liked. To Mitch, Dave has it all. Beautiful wife, Jamie, Leslie Mann, and kids who adore him, and a high-paying job at a prestigious law firm. To Dave, living Mitch's stress-free life without obligation or consequence will be a dream come true. Following a drunken night out together, Mitch and Dave's worlds are turned upside down when they wake up in each other's bodies and proceed to freak out. Despite the freedom from their normal routines and habits, the guys soon discover that each other's lives are nowhere near as rosy as they once seemed. Further complicating matters are Dave's sexy legal associate Sabrina, Olivia Wilde, and Mitch's estranged father, Alan Arkin. With time not on their side, Mitch and Dave comically struggle to avoid destroying each other's lives before they can find a way to get their old ones back. Now, watching the trailer, my heart sank when it said it came from the same writer as The Hangover, as that never attracted me. But this one does really seem to have some good laughs and some neat comic timing in it. Whether that can maintain the whole pace for a whole almost 2 hours is anyone's guess. But we'll see. Down to number 5, we've got Captain America, The First Avenger. Number 6, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Number 7, we've got Crazy Stupid Love, which that only came out in America last week. And in that one, Cal, Steve Carell, and Emily, Julianne Moore, have the perfect life together, living the American dream, until Emily asks for a divorce. Now Cal, Mr. Husband, has to navigate the single scene with a little help from his professional bachelor friend, Jacob Palmer, Ryan Gosling. Well, less a little help, and more like a lot of help. Also starring Marissa Tomei and Emma Stone, from Easy A and Friends with Benefits. Watching the trailer, I got a couple of laughs out of it, but there's nothing in there that would make me want to sit through the entire movie. Making up the rest of the top 10, number 8, we've got Friends with Benefits with Justin Timberlake and Mila Kunis. When I got around to seeing the trailer for that, it really did look as bad as it sounded. Horrible Bosses at number 9, and number 10, Transformers Dark of the Moon. Now, at the moment, we'll be having a little look at the cinema releases, apart from The Planet of the Apes and The Smurfs, which I've already mentioned. I've got a few other new releases that are out this week. Including The Devil's Double with Dominic Cooper. So we'll have that in a moment. But first of all, we're going to have T-Rex and Get It On. So it's 106.6.
106.6.
Now this section, we're going to be having a look at the cinema releases out this Friday. And in the previous section, I already mentioned two, which are in the US charts at the moment, but which are coming out this week. We've got, Rise of the Planet of the Apes and The Smurfs. But the others are coming out. We start off with The Devil's Double. Now, by the way, all the trailers for all of these are on the Facebook page. So just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show and you'll be able to see them there. Now, The Devil's Double. A chilling vision of the house of Saddam Hussein comes to life through the eyes of the man who was forced to become the double of Hussein's sadistic son. Baghdad, the playground for the rich and famous, where anything can be bought, but for a price. This is Uday Hussein's world. And with his depraved lust for debauchery and immorality, he helps himself to whatever turns him on. When Army Lieutenant Latif Yahya is summoned to Saddam's palace, he's faced with an impossible request. To be Uday's fide, his body double, will have his family condemned to death. In a world entrenched in betrayal and corruption, knowing who to trust becomes a matter of life or death for Latif as he battles to escape from his forced existence. Now, watching the trailer for this one, Dominic Cooper, in both roles, does look to be playing rather a blinder, as effectively being on both sides of the coin, and at one point interacting with himself when it comes to carrying out an order to shoot someone on Uday's command. And based on what I've seen there, I say this is definitely worth a look. Next up, we've got Evil Things. And this one, it's Miriam's 21st birthday. As a birthday gift, Miriam's aunt Gail has decided to lend Miriam her beautiful country house for an entire weekend. Aunt Gail's country house is amazing. It's a four-bedroom house surrounded by breathtaking mountains and miles of woods. Miriam invites her young college friends, Cassie, Mark, Tanya and Leo, to join her at the country house for what looks like to be the most amazing weekend ever. Of course, they all jump at the chance to spend a free weekend in the country in the middle of nowhere. Miriam's friends are totally in the mood for the big-time party weekend. They're also anxious to escape the dark and gloomy concrete jungle known as Manhattan. Miriam, Cassie and Tanya bring the food. Mark brings the beer, and Leo, the aspiring filmmaker, brings his new video camera. Good job, otherwise, probably wouldn't have a film. Now, Leo hopes to produce a short movie by documenting every amazing moment of this weekend getaway. Unfortunately, what Leo ends up capturing on camera is not a weekend of peace and tranquility, but a nightmarish descent into pure terror. Now, when I saw this, the trailer seemed to rather give little away. It basically just looks like a cross between the Blair Witch Project, which was terrible for me, and Paranormal Activity, which just really didn't interest me at all. So I'm going to definitely give this one a miss, because watching the trailer, it just looks like absolutely zero thought has gone into it whatsoever. Next up, we've got Hell and Back. Now, on the morning of his twin daughter's fifth birthday, a local DJ, Rob's life, is left in ruins when his wife of 10 years tells him she no longer loves him and asks him to leave. Faced with the upheaval of losing his family, his despair drops further when he finds his now estranged wife in the arms of another. After 18 months of solitude while working in a local pub, he finally meets someone that sends his heart in a flutter and his body trembling. The love he thought he could never exist again had never been stronger. His desire was so immense for her morning, day and night, and she consumed his mind. And after 8 months, an engagement is announced. This is a dream come true. Now, just like deja vu, it happens again, with the return of a former policeman lover who manipulates her again, as he once did before. This plummets Rob deep into the depths of depression, and he must fight his personal demons, resulting in a failed suicide bid and a huge drink and drug session. With the help of his friend's support and a very much surprised victory in a local singing contest, he fights back. Winning a regional final contest, his success continues and his dream of a professional singer is completed as he performs for a sell-out concert. Now, I couldn't actually find a trailer for this particular film, which is made in Britain, but I have to say that the premise really doesn't grab me. I mean, if you've seen this one or if you're going to see it, post something on the Facebook page and just let me know what you think. Also out this week, we've got Elite Squad 2. Now, after a bloody invasion of the BOPE, which translates in English to the Portuguese for Special Police Operations Battalion, in the high security penitentiary Bangu 1 in Rio de Janeiro to control a rebellion of interns, the Lieutenant Colonel Roberto Nascimento and the second in command, Captain Andre Mateus, are accused by the human rights AIDS member Diogo Fraga of execution of prisoners. Mateus is transferred to the corrupted military police, and Nascimento is exonerated from the BOPE by the governor. However, due to the increasing popularity of Nascimento, the governor invites him to team up with the intelligence area of the Secretary of Security. Along the years, Fraga, who is married with Nascimento's former wife, is elected state representative, and Nascimento's son, Rafael, has issues with his biological father. Meanwhile, Nascimento and the BOPE expel the drug dealers from several slums, but another enemy arises, the militia, led by Major Roca, and supported by the governor, the Secretary of Security, banned politicians interested in votes. Nascimento is manipulated to help this group, vanquishing the criminals in the slums and the poor communities, and then the corrupt group of police officers is free to exploit the poor population. Now, filmed in Brazil, I hadn't seen the first one. And while there's a lot of gunfights going on, the trailer just completely failed to engage me. But have a look at it on the Facebook page and let me know what you think on that. Especially if you've seen the original as well. And finally, the other new release out this week is Beautiful Lies. Now, it's hard to sustain a relationship based on a lie, and things get a lot complicated here when lies become the foundations on which romantic relationships, favours, and that between parent and child all get built upon. Where an innocently anonymous letter from a hair salon handyman, Jean, Sammy Bougelia, to his boss, Emily, Audrey Tattoo, the salon co-owner, gets tossed aside by the latter, since she obviously paid no heed to it, only for that attention to be retracted when she realised that her mum, Maddie, Natalie Bay, is due for a romantic lift from a prolonged, sustained depression since her husband left her for someone younger, a nubile to be his artistic muse. Thus begins a series of contrived misunderstandings and lies built upon lies, with the constant letter writings from Emily, posing as an anonymous admirer, only for a ruse to be unintentionally skewed way off mark when Maddie thinks it is indeed Jean who has hidden feelings for her. No thanks to an errand Jean had to run, which took him to dropping off the letter. Naturally, this follows plenty of hidden meanings and Emily trying to come between the two for fear of an expose, guiding this film to some laughable, light-hearted moments, it says here. Now, from the trailer, basically, this is man fancies woman, woman doesn't fancy man, so she sets him up with her mum instead. You can predict how this is going to play out from start to finish, and in my view, it really didn't need 2 hours to do that, so I think I'm going to pass on that one. In a moment, we're going to be having a look at the DVDs out this week, but first of all, we're going to have some music from Spandau Ballet and Chant Number 1. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now, in this section, we're going to be having a look at the DVDs that are out this week, starting with Sucker Punch. Chat on Blu-ray and DVD, and as far as I know, both include an extended cut of this. Now, Sucker Punch is an epic action fantasy that takes us into the vivid imagination of a young girl whose dream world provides the ultimate escape from a darker reality. Unrestrained by the boundaries of time and place, she's free to go where her mind takes her. Her incredible adventures blur the lines between what's real and what is imaginary. She's been locked away against her will, but Baby Doll, Emily Browning, has not lost the will to survive. Determined to fight for her freedom, she urges four other girls, the outspoken Rocket, Jenna Malone, the street-smart Blondie, Vanessa Hudgens, the fiercely loyal Amber, Jamie Chung, and the reluctant Sweet Pea, Abby Cornish, to band together and try to escape their terrible fate at the hands of their captors, Blue, Oscar Isaac, Madame Gorski, Carla Guino, and the High Roller, John Hamm. Led by Baby Doll, the girls engage in fantastical warfare against everything from samurais to serpents, with a virtual arsenal at their disposal. Together they must decide what they are willing to sacrifice in order to stay alive, but with the help of a wise man, Scott Glenn, their unbelievable journey, if they succeed, will set them free. Our special features on this disc include 4 animated shorts and a behind the soundtrack featurette. Now, I've not seen this film yet, but the trailer basically shows a lot of women in very skimpy outfits with the backdrop of fantastic special effects. Well, I'm sold. And this is one I do have to watch at some point soon. Next out, I've got 2.5 Men Season 8. Now, Charlie Sheen and John Cryer star in the Emmy Award nominated 2.5 Men, a comedy about men, women, sex, dating, divorce, mothers, single parenthood, sibling relations, surrogate families, money, and most importantly, love. More specifically, it's about the lives of 2 brothers, a son-stroke nephew, and the many women who surround them all. Charlie Harper is a well-to-do bachelor and with a house at the beach, a Mercedes in the garage, and an easy way with women. His casual Malibu lifestyle is interrupted when his tightly wound brother, Alan, and Alan's son, Jake, come to stay with him. Despite the complexities of their lives and their own strained relationship, Charlie and Alan have one thing in common. They both love Jake and want what's best for him. As a result, they manage to create a little family unit that promises to make each one of them a better man. Now, I've only tried to watch an episode of this once, and it was dreadful. God knows how Charlie Sheen managed to end up getting $2 million an episode, but as we've seen since, not all of his spendings have been wise ones. But if you're a fan of Big Brother, when that starts again, so it's starting next Thursday on Channel 5. He's rumoured to be in the Celebrity Big Brother house. So, when it comes to Two and a Half Men, if you've made it to season 8, then nothing I can say will put you off, but I certainly won't be tuning in for this one. Also out this week, we've got Your Highness, which the extended version is actually known as the longer, harder version. Ho, ho, ho. Throughout history, tales of chivalry have burnished the legends of brave, handsome knights who rescue fair damsels, slay dragons and conquer evil. But behind many a hero is a good-for-nothing younger brother trying just to stay out of the way of those dragons, evil and trouble in general. Danny McBride and James Franco team up for an epic comedy adventure set in a fantastical world as two princes on a daring mission to save their land. They must rescue their heir apparent's fiancé before their kingdom is destroyed. Thaddeus McBride has spent his life watching his perfect older brother, Fabius Franco, embark upon valiant journeys and win the hearts of the people. Tired of being passed over for an adventure, adoration of the throne, he settled for a life of wizard's deed, hard booze and easy maidens. When Fabius's bride-to-be, Belladonna, Zooey Deschanel, gets kidnapped by the evil wizard Lazar, Justin Theroux, the king gives his deadbeat son an ultimatum. Man up and help rescue her, or get cut off. Now, apart from the presence of Natalie Portman and Zooey Deschanel, to me this comedy action film just seemed to fall completely flat for me. Perhaps one or two mild chuckles during the trailer, but overall it's not one that I can recommend. If it's something that you want to get, then you'll be pleased to know there's alternate scenes, deleted scenes, extended scenes, gag reel, a making of, and something called Perverted Visions, although perhaps that's about Natalie Portman wearing a thong in the trailer. Also out this week, got a digitally remastered version of Whiskey Galore, which ranks amongst the most popular and best loved of Ealing Studios comedies, included on the British Film Institute's list of the 100 best films of the 20th century. When a ship carrying 50,000 cases of whiskey runs aground, the inhabitants of a Scottish island cannot resist the temptation to replenish their depleted supplies. Only an English Home Guard captain, played brilliantly by Basil Greenwood, stands in their way. The first film from Ealing stalwarts Alexander McKendrick, who went on to direct The Lady Killers and The Man in the White Suit, Whiskey Galore is a 100% proof comedy classic, now digitally restored and remastered to its former glory. And also this week, we've got The Drummond Will. Now, this is a devilishly black comedy that follows two city boy brothers, one a charismatic optimist, the other a whining corporate sellout, as they return to the countryside for their father's funeral. On checking out his decrepit estate, the boys find one of their dad's ancient friends hiding in a closet with a bag full of money. While they decide what to do, the pensioners have to suffocate to death in the closet, thus leaving them with a much bigger problem to deal with. Tell the police, or take the body and leave it in his own home and pretend nothing has happened, keeping the money for themselves in the process, of course. This opens up their world to a series of bizarre incidents, resulting in the village's quirky population gently decreasing during their short stay. The brothers soon realise they'll need to rely on each other if they are to survive, and it quickly becomes clear that inevitably nothing is what it seems. Oh, and that accidents will happen. Filmed in black and white, I saw the trailer and it really did grab me with its dark humour, and as the pair go about murdering old people in order to get their money, which unfortunately does sound like rather the kind of thing that's made the headlines in recent years. Also out this week, just a quick summary, we've got some new films. We've got Dark Matter with Meryl Streep and Aidan Quinn. Island with Colin Morgan from Merlin. Meek's Cut Off. LA Without a Map, which has got David Tennant in. The Lost Bladesman. My Brother's Keeper with Jack Warner and George Cole. United with David Tennant again. And the release of Who Dares Wins with Lewis Collins. Some TV series, we've got Complete Collection of Harry Worth. The Inedian Lion Series 4, Rick Stein, Spain, if that's your bag, Tenko Series 3, the latest series of Top Gear, and Series 7 of Who Do You Think You Are, which new series of that starts on BBC on Wednesday, I think, or did it start last week, I'm not sure, either way I think it's on Wednesday at 9 o'clock. There's also some Blu-ray premieres for The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, Chocolat, IMAX Legends of the Flight 3D, and also Stand By Me, which has reached the 25th anniversary this year. Okay, that's all your DVD releases out this week. And in a minute, we'll be having some film news for you. But first of all, we're going to have a sort of well, film-related song from Pulp Fiction. We've got Al Green and Let's Stay Together. This is 106.6.
106.6.
And we're going to have some film news in this section, taking us up to the top of the hour. We'll start off some sad news of obituary for Bubba Smith. Now, Charles Aaron Bubba Smith was he was born in 1945. Was an American actor and athlete. He was a professional football player in the 1960s and 70s, who became an actor in the late 70s and was well known for his height of 6'7". Smith played college football at Michigan State University. He was awarded with an All-America honors in 1965 and 66. In his senior season, he played in the game of the century, a 10-10 tie at home against the University of Notre Dame. Michigan State finished second in the voting for the national championship behind Notre Dame. And in 1988, Smith was enshrined in the College Football Hall of Fame. He was a popular athlete at Michigan State with the popular chant of "Kill Bubba Kill." After leaving professional football, Smith began his acting career in small movie and TV roles in the late 70s and early 80s. He was perhaps best known for his role as Moses Hightower in the Police Academy movie series, a role he has reprised in all but one of the Police Academy sequels. He appeared in two episodes of the hit TV series Married with Children, once as the character Spare Tire Dixon, and later in a later episode as himself. He was a long-time spokesman of the Baltimore area law firm Cohen, Snyder, Eisenberg and Katzenberg. Smith starred in the short-lived TV series Blue Thunder, partnering with Pro Football Hall of Fame defensive star Dick Butkus, with whom he frequently co-starred in advertisements for Miller Lite beer. Smith also appeared in Tales of the Gold Monkey in the episode called God Save the Queen, along with fellow actor James Avery. He appeared on Good Times as Claude, a bodyguard stroke thug working for Marion's sweet daddy Williams. And he also appeared on an episode of The Odd Couple. When asked by Oscar Madison what his most embarrassing moment was, he replied, "When my mother named me Bubba." Smith was found dead in Los Angeles, in his Los Angeles home by his caretaker last Wednesday, and he's thought to have died from natural causes. And he was only 66 years old. In other news, it's Leonardo DiCaprio up for The Creed of Violence with Todd Field. And rumours are rife that he could be set to join another period Western, this particular film. And I say another, as DiCaprio is set to play villain Calvin Candy in Quentin Tarantino's Django Unchained. There still hasn't been 100% official confirmation on that casting, which seems to be taken as a given now. According to an unnamed source in a Los Angeles Times report, DiCaprio is reportedly interested in starring in The Creed of Violence, which is based on a novel by Boston Turan. Set in 1910, the story takes place in Mexico during the Revolution. A criminal named Rawbone tries to smuggle weapons into Mexico, but is caught and accompanied by a government agent with whom he shares a mysterious past. It is said that Leo could potentially end up playing either role. Director Todd Field has been developing the project for some time, although DiCaprio's involvement could obviously help speed things up. Field's previous works, In the Bedroom and Little Children, have been very interesting character-orientated numbers, so it would be intriguing to see what he could do with this kind of genre property. DiCaprio, who starred in Sam Raimi's Western The Quick and the Dead, has recently finished up on Clint Eastwood's J. Edgar, and he has Django and The Great Gatsby lined up, so it's possible that Creed might not happen in the near future. Expect the long-gestating project to suddenly become a lot more high-profile if DiCaprio does come on board, though. Also in the news this week, Bryan Cranston is joining the cast of World War Z. The actor from Breaking Bad, his quest for world domination of Hollywood, took a step back when he was forced to drop out of period police drama Gangster Squad. However, now Cranston's attempt to appear in every movie in production back on track as he joins it. However, now Cranston's attempt to appear in every movie in production is back on track as he joins the cast of Paramount's adaptation of World War Z. THR reports that Cranston is in negotiations to play a small but flashy role in the movie, which is based on Max Brooks' best-selling novel. Little else is known about Cranston's part. Brad Pitt headlines the cast as a UN researcher who is trying to learn about the zombie apocalypse 10 years after the fact. Cranston joins fellow AMC actors Miral Ennis, The Killing, who plays Pitt's wife in the movie, and James Badge Dale from Rubicon, who plays a soldier and tries to warn humanity of the zombie uprising. Adapted by screenwriters Matthew Michael Carnahan from The Kingdom and J. Michael Straczynski, The Changeling, World War Z is currently in production in the UK. Some recent set photos depicted Pitt on board of a salvage vessel in Falmouth, Cornwall. Mark Forster, Quantum of Solace, is directing the movie, which co-stars Eliz Gable from HBO's Game of Thrones and French actress Julia Levy-Boken in unknown roles. Okay, so that's your movie news for this week. And that's all your film stuff for this week as well. And in the next half hour, the next hour, we'll be looking at video games and TV, starting with the video games section and the review of Boulder Dash XL on the Xbox 360. But coming up to the top of the hour, I've got a song for my mate Kev Fletcher. Excuse me. And we've got Yes telling us some of their wondrous stories. It's 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Links with Intuition, and you're back on 106.6, live from North Manchester. And you're back with the DVD Fever Show with Don Bromison. Now, in this hour, first of all, we have a look at some video games with a review of Boulder Dash XL on the Xbox 360, plus the top 10 games charts and new video games releases, including Age of Empires Online, plus some video games news. And then I'll also have a look at some TV stuff, including a review of Hell's Kitchen USA on ITV2 and also Dragon's Den on BBC2. A look ahead, some more programmes coming up, and also some TV news. But first, before we get to all that, Aaron Metz is going to tell us what's coming up on his show at 2 o'clock.
Hello, Dom. You all right?
Hello, not too bad. How are you doing?
Yeah. Coming up on the Aaron Metz show on Manchester's 106.6, Tony Lloyd is going to be joining me. I'm not sure if you just heard, Dom. David Cameron's just been on the has just made an announcement that he's recalling Parliament because of the riots that have taken place, and so Tony Lloyd's going to be joining me over the phone to talk about that. And then I'm not sure if you saw the BBC Panorama documentary last night about the Zimbabwe Blood Diamonds. The human rights group, the Restoration of Human Rights for Zimbabwe, their representative Panyaka Karamanzira, he's going to be joining me on the show to talk about the human rights abuses that are taking place in Zimbabwe. And pretty much from what he had to tell me, you know, that documentary only just scratched the surface of what's going on in that country at the moment. Yeah. It's insane.
Oh dear. Okie dokie. Well, that's coming up at 2 o'clock. First of all, let's have a look at a video games review, and we've got Boulder Dash XL on Xbox 360, which is part of the Xbox Live Arcade games. And a Boulder Dash is another 80s classic and once been revived for the modern age. It's also another Atari title that started out on the old Atari 8-bit consoles, and one which I don't remember playing a massive amount of times, but it's one of those titles where once you played it, you can never forget it.
Yeah, I've got to say, Dom, it's, you know, I'm familiar with some of the Atari games, but you know, I try and download any Xbox Live Arcade game I can, if I get the time to play it. I don't know, that's a new one for me. I've got to keep my eye out for that one.
Yeah, this is certainly worth having a look. Taking the role of either Rockford or Crystal, your task is to dig through the dirt to collect diamonds while being careful not to get through too much, such that too many rocks above are disturbed and come crashing down on you. A fair proportion of the level is already set out in tunnels, so strategy is required, since if you were to continually dig everywhere, you'll end up coming up with serious issues when it comes to safety. This will cause the rocks to either crash down on you or trap you and stop you progressing to the end. Presuming you make it through without coming a cropper, you'll have to collect a certain number of diamonds specified, which aren't always a total available in the level, before heading to the exit, and all under a strict time limit. This brings about some confusion where you can't always find it, but this new version allows you to pause the game and look all around the level in order to find it, so you don't lose out to time. Also, whereas before, a diamond that falls onto your head meant instant death, here it's not a problem. It's just another collected diamond. Now, the game modes in this release are as follows. We've got the arcade mode, which is straightforward. Collect the diamonds, push the rocks out of the way, evade the baddies, and try not to get squished by anything falling. Then there's a puzzle mode, which is, these are slightly different in that they require you to think a little bit more rather than just rushing through a maze. You'll need to work out how precisely you need to push the boulders, sometimes while standing still, before continuing to get the diamonds and then heading for the exit. It's very easy to get caught out, though. But then there's no time limit in these caves, so tread carefully. Then there's a Zen mode. Play previously solved caves again without the pressure of a time limit, allowing you to focus on those gem-grabbing skills. Then there's a score attack, get as many points as possible in specially designed caves within the time limit. The exit will open early, and making it back before the time runs out will be rewarded big time, so plan your strategy accordingly. It's also a retro mode, which does what it suggests on the tin, with the original Boulder Dash from the old 8-bit days, when the video games were a lot less forgiving and falling diamonds were deadly, unlike in this new version. This really is the icing on the cake for a great fun Xbox Live Arcade title. And with this new release, the levels, all 150 of them, do get fiendishly difficult before too long and are very well put together. However hard you try, you can't always get every last diamond, especially on those caves with a very tight time limit, but therein lies the challenge. Now, the scores I've given this game are reflective of how they get the game across today with glorious updated HD graphics. Surely it's not an action blaster like, say, Crysis 2, but for how it brings Boulder Dash to the current generation, it's definitely a must-play. Now, someone tell Atari that this is the way to remake a classic for the modern generation, after dire games like Star Raiders and Yar's Revenge.
Yeah, do you remember the good old days when, you know, hedgehogs ran for, you know, as fast as they can through, you know, rings and things like that? Oh, and yeah. Do you remember the good old days when, you know, Italian plumbers jumped on Goombas and, you know, it's like, you know, I'm really glad to hear something like that still, you know, popular nowadays, you know.
That's it, and say after that.
How old do I sound?
You're younger than me. But, I mean, some of the remakes that they've done recently have just been pretty appalling. But this one is by a company called Calypso Games. They really hit the nail with this one. Graphics, I'd give that an 8 out of 10. Sound, 7 out of 10. Playability is a good 10 out of 10 because it's a cracking game. 9 for enjoyment, and overall, an 8. So, yeah, I definitely recommend that one.
Yeah, I might give it a look, absolutely. It's just, you know, it's like, plus it's a change as well, because it's like, you know, you look at some of the other games that were going to be coming out soon, and, you know, Halo 4 got recently announced, but I know that's a pretty, somewhere down the line, and then Gears of War 3 is going to be coming out soon, which, you know, I played the beta, version, and that's absolutely incredible. I'm going to be definitely getting that, in September. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one, too. It's just, but, you know, have you seen the theme here? It's like, you know, we got, you know, Gears of War, Halo, Call of Duty, Gears of War, Halo, Call of Duty. It's like, you know, I know there are other game companies out there that are trying their best, you know, bringing something new to the table, and also, you know, they're bringing back, some of the older stuff, which, you know, where people, you know, who are now in the current console generation are probably too young to admire and remember. But, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's like, besides, you know, Super Meat Boy and, you know, some other, you know, very creative, other creative games, I don't know, it's kind of lacking really in the creativity department. I think people just seem to be interested in, like, games that shoot and games that require
it's
army
just
and
just sequel after sequel after
like
sequel, isn't it?
Yeah, there's football simulation games, I like them, but, you know, it's just, I don't know really, it all seems to just seem to follow kind of the same narrative, if you will.
Yeah.
Kind of like our news media.
Absolutely. Okay, well, in a moment we're going to have a look at the top 10 games charts. But first of all, we're going to have a bit of music. I'm going to have OMD with Talking Loud and Clear. This is 106.6. 106.6. Now, in this section, video games, we're going to be having a look at the top 10 charts and some new releases out this Friday. Although, as I've said before, at the moment there's not a great deal out at the moment because of, it's just barely anything because it's just summer, really. There is some good stuff coming up later up in August and in September, though. But the top 10 charts, number one, yet again, got the umpteenth week running, got Zumba Fitness. Number two, Dirt 3. Number three, Cars 2. It's all sequels, looks like films. And number four, Just Dance 2, Extra Songs. Number five, Lego Pirates of the Caribbean. Number six, FIFA 11. Number seven, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Number 8, Lego Harry Potter, years 1 to 4. Number 9, L.A. Noire, which I thought was rather disappointing. I did I brought you a review of that a few weeks ago on this show. And also number 10, Call of Juarez, The Cartel. Now, I haven't played either of the two previous games, but the gameplay, which I've linked on the Facebook page, as they go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow, the gameplay does look pretty similar to and as competent as the Just Cause series, so this one certainly seems worth a look. A couple of re-entries in the top 40. Number 27, we got EA Sports Active 2, and number 36, we got Pokemon White Version. Now, new video games releases. First up, we've got Maze Mysteries, The Secret of Dragonville, which is an exciting puzzle adventure for the Nintendo DS. Follow Mei, an intelligent, charismatic girl in her quest to find a missing brother. Advance through the adventure by solving over 270 puzzles, including logic puzzles, tricky rhythmic games, and beautifully hand-drawn hidden object scenes. Search for clues about Maze Brother, visit mysterious locations, and meet interesting characters along the way, which will help you in your journey. This features an intriguing storyline adventure with 80 locations, 8 music themes, an experience through unexpected upheavals, and enjoy 7 minutes of movie-quality animation with voiceover, and also 25 hours of gameplay. Also out on the DS this Friday, I've got 7 Wonders, Treasures of 7. It says, match runes and break blocks as you build the world's most wondrous structures in this fun Match 3 game. In this latest installment of 7 Wonders, it's time to build 9 of the most intriguing structures throughout history. With an all-new rotatable board, 7 Wonders, Treasures of 7 will have puzzle game players everywhere matching runes for hours. To play, you must match runes to break blocks and uncover lock and keystone for each round. Rotate the cube face to move the keystone along the pathways created to reach each level's lock and conquer all 6 sides. Once you've mastered the faces of the outer cube, move to the inner cube, where you'll attain pieces to build your compass. Build all 9 amazing wonders and uncover the hidden city with the help of the map and compass. Don't miss this incredible and innovative chapter in the 7 Wonders. Also out, as I mentioned earlier, I've got Age of Empires Online. And the award-winning, best-selling real-time strategy game is moving online. Build mighty empires, manage resources, and battle with or against other players in epic historical settings. Craft and trade items, chat and level up by completing quests, plus earn rewards for your efforts. New units, weapons, armor and skills. That's just the beginning of this rich new experience. Game features include a classic real-time strategy gameplay. From the creation of your capital city to resource management and competitive matches, Age of Empires fans will feel right at home. There's new innovative features. You can embark on quests alone or with a friend, earn rewards, and your empire even continues to grow and accrue resources when you want online. It's also empire building. Start with a humble town, build it into an epic empire, then show it off to your friends. And finally, you have a living and growing world. Every completed quest brings new abilities and new rewards. And the more you play, the more powerful you become. Finally, that's Friday. We've got Pheasants Forever on the Wii. This comes from Funbox Media. Feel the chill in the air and the leaves under your feet as you prepare for the moment. Then suddenly, a flurry fills the air. Pheasants Forever is an arcade-style bird-hunting game for up to 2 players. Objectives range from scoring the most points as quickly as possible to shot accuracy. Primary targets are the ringnet pheasant, wild turkey, California quail, mallard, and ruffled grouse. There are 3 distinct game modes in the Pheasants Forever. These game modes define your experience while playing the game. Arcade mode offers a single round of bird hunting for 1 player. After selecting this, you can select a skill level and location. Each location has its own objective and time limit. You can earn trophies based on the actions performed during play, but only if you successfully complete the round's objective within that time limit. In tournament mode, you must progress through each location, attempting to reach a particular score or other objective. If you meet the objective, you'll earn a hunting token you can use to unlock another location. And once all of them are unlocked, the state and national tournaments... once all locations are locked, you'll be able to play the state and national tournaments. As in the arcade mode, the player can earn special trophies by meeting specific requirements. Also, there's a head-to-head mode, which pits player against player in a bird-blasting shootout. You compete to do better than your opponent by scoring higher or finishing faster, depending on your location. As an added benefit, you can stick it to your buddy by triggering special gotcha effects that hamper your opponent's abilities. Okay, I say it's not a great deal out this coming Friday, but as Darren mentioned, we've got Gears of War 3 coming up next. That's coming out next month, and also I know that the new Deus Ex game that's coming out, I think, about 2 weeks' time. So those should be worth looking forward to. Okay, we're having some video games news in a moment, but first of all, on 106.6, we're going to be having Enjoying the Blockheads, Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick. This is 106.6.
106.6.
And this section taking us up to the 130 section, we have a bit of video games news. Now, the developers behind Mafia and Dragon's Lair have come together to open a new development studio in Prague. Ooh, I was on holiday there recently. Warhorse Studios is headed by Mafia creator Daniel Vavra and Dragon's Lair author Martin Klima. They've been joined by Arma and Operation Flashpoint designer Victor Borken and Mafia animator Zbigniew Trawiński. The team is currently working on an unannounced RPG title which will incorporate realistic design and a quality story. Warhorse Studios said in a statement, "There is a common thread running through our previous games, open worlds, strong storyline, and last but not least, realistic design. We can proudly say that the games Mafia and Operation Flashpoint were the vanguard of this approach, and millions of players worldwide clearly share our view. Even if our new project is different in many respects, it is a game that is not going to disappoint fans of open, realistic worlds and quality stories." Vavra's previous game, Mafia 2, was released for the Xbox 360, PS3 and PC last year. Now, some news for what's happening this Friday. There's going to be a Nintendo 3DS price cut. It will receive a worldwide price drop this Friday, less than 6 months after its initial launch. A third of the system's trade price to retailers will be reduced in Europe as part of a global trade price reduction initiative, said the firm. With current prices standing at around £200, you could see Nintendo 3DS hardware drop to around £140 to £160. Now, on the Nintendo theme, we've also got the fact there's going to be no Wii U price or date details until 2012, said Nintendo. Speaking with investors, the Nintendo president, Satoru Iwata, stated that the company will not announce any retail information for its next home console before the end of the year. Since the Wii U, we showed off at the E3 show in June, was still in development phase without very specific proposals on the software titles, we are going to announce a release date and price next year when we are able to explain the specific proposals, he said. Nintendo announced many games in development for the Wii U at E3 2011, including Darksiders 2, Aliens, Colonial Marines, Metro Last Light, Ghost Recon Online, and Batman Arkham City. However, no specific details were given about launch titles for the console. Iwata also addressed the 3DS price drop and what it will mean for consumer trust in Nintendo when the Wii U launches. With regards to the influence on the Wii U, what we have to take most seriously is that the price markdown could damage the trust of the consumers who bought the Nintendo 3DS just after the launch, he said. I feel greatly accountable for it. Our decision of the price markdown at this time has a side effect that at the launch of the Wii U, people may feel that the price might drop in the near future if they wait. What we'll be able to do to recover the consumer's trust before the launch of the Wii U is very important to us. I mean, what I seem to remember is I think it's due to come out around about April next year. So if you sort of, you know, don't buy when it comes out and get it towards Christmas next year, you know, you'll probably save a bundle. But to help build consumer trust, Nintendo will launch a 3DS Ambassador program in September, offering 10 NES and 10 Game Boy Advance games free to early adopters of the system. Confirmed games include The Legend of Zelda, Super Mario Bros., Yoshi's Island, Super Mario Advance 3, Mario Kart Super Circuit, Metroid Fusion, and Mario vs. Donkey Kong. Okay, that's all your video games news for this week. And in a bit, we're going to be having a look at some TV stuff, starting off with reviews of Hell's Kitchen USA and Dragon's Den, and also just a quick look at the second episode of Beaver Falls, because I thought I'd give that another try, see if it was any better second time round. But before that, we're going to be having a bit of music with Flock of Seagulls and The More You Live. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now, this last half hour of the show, we'll be having a look at some TV programmes watched in the past week, a look at some new stuff coming up, and also some TV news. And one thing I had a look at last week, and basically it's Beaver Falls, which is on E4 every Wednesday at 9 o'clock. Now, I tried a second episode last week, which showed sex tape maker rich girl Lily Meadows, clearly based on Paris Hilton, arriving at the camp. The lads managed to make up for a lack of proper rookie day activities by getting her and her friends to take all the lads in their cabin out for a date at the Independence Day dance. They only managed this after Flynn dealt with the date. Hang on. They managed this after Flynn dealt with the photographer, rather, who sneaked into the camp to take prying snapshots of Lily and all her friends. Now, Flynn also managed to convince a girl he fancied, but who thinks he's a sexist buffoon, to take him at face value when he claims to have had the same disease that put Stephen Hawking in a wheelchair. How she fell for that, God alone knows. Later on, Barry took the old lady who works in the admin office to the dance, which caused all the jocks to kick off at her because they were denied dates as a result of what happened with Lily and her friends. But Barry managed to show them up in front of everyone, only for Kimberly's boyfriend Jake, the head of the jocks, to threaten him later that if Barry can bring an old lady to the fight, then he'll get a sick orphan. Overall, this show really deserves half marks. I don't hate it, but still severely lacking as well. It's also entirely predictable, so expect that Barry will cop off with Kimberly by the end of the series, for example, something that would have only taken about 90 minutes to happen in the average mid-80s American romantic comedy. I'm not massively thrilled about watching further episodes, so it's going to depend on whether I'm going out, because I'm not going to bother recording this one. Also, that was on this week. This is something that started the previous week, but we've got Dragon's Den has come back, which is a series presented by Evan Davis, in which budding entrepreneurs get 3 minutes to pitch their business ideas to five multimillionaires willing to invest their own cash to kickstart the business. And this time there's a new dragon, Hilary DeVay. Now, the first episode started with a woman with a gift website who couldn't explain herself properly, but with Theo jumping in with 60 grand for 30% of the business, before being toppled by Peter with 25% of the same amount. To be honest, I think both of them wanted a rather different piece of her. Later on, there was Chris Hopkins, a man with the feed-in tariff solar panels, where you put them up on your roof and feed solar electricity back into the grid and get £1,600 back per year. But it does include you do have to pay out a purchase price of 14 grand per unit in the first place, even though they do last 25 years. He succeeded in getting Deborah Meaden and Theo Perfitas, who took together a 25% stake in his company in exchange for their funding of a total of 120 grand. Then there was also Rodrigo Perez, a human cannonball, wanting money for a cannon that they said was already 80% built. Theo was quickly out, saying it's more of a passion than a business, and the guy went away with nothing. In the second episode, we had two young women, Claire and Chrissy, with The Bass Station, a vehicle that went about teaching people how to be rappers and mix music. They cost £1,500 a day to hire, and their profits are £500 for each booking. They claim to have many advanced bookings, but the youth sector won't make the millions compared to how the corporate sector does, and they want to put their profits from the latter into the former, as they have a great passion for the concept. They claim they'd go from a 40 grand profit to a 500 grand profit, but never managed to say exactly why, and then, as a result, left with nothing. There was also a man who had an inflatable car bed, which looked about as comfortable as trapping your hand in a car door, and also something called Love Da Pop, which makes what its owners claim is the world's best popcorn, and while they feel they have a great brand, the dragons, one by one, tell them that they're not going to make a fortune or be the next Ben and Jerry. They're told they'll only take off if they manage to make a deal with one of the top cinema chains, and only Peter Jones offered them money. All 70 grand for a massive 45% stake in the business, which they accepted. There was also a woman who charged, this is rather bizarre, this charged £40 for a website about challenging parking fines when it would normally cost £80 for the fine itself. However, if you just write to your local council, and you can challenge them anyway, and some of them will actually freeze the fine while you're challenging them. Unsurprisingly, she left with nothing. So this was, I know it's in its like 8th and 9th series, this is actually the first time I've watched Dragon's Den. It's alright, but it lasts far too long for an hour, and I don't think it's going to be something I'm tuning into on a regular basis. Also, something started last week, but I mentioned this week, got Hell's Kitchen USA, which has returned. It's a new series of Gordon Ramsay's US cooking competition, in which 18 contestants battle it out for the prize of a head chef position at BLT Steak in New York City. The competition kicks off with the signature dish challenge, with the most successful team getting to enjoy a lunch at the LA Market restaurant at the JW Marriott Hotel at LA Live, where they eat with last season's winner. Okay, so it's Hell's Kitchen by numbers, but I've been watching this since the middle of season 2, and it's now in its 9th season, the last few having run on a 6-monthly basis rather than once a year. It's all overblown and just over-the-top nonsense, but it's the only reality show that I watch, and I do enjoy it. In the first episode, during the first service, one guy immediately fainted and was carried off to hospital for a few days, never to return. In the end, a guy who looked like Ned Flanders from The Simpsons left, and two others were left to battle another day. But the men were destined to find one of them for the chop, because he couldn't even complete a dinner service without the diners walking out, as he couldn't get a single main meal out. In episode 2, everyone was woken up at 5:30 a.m. with a kid playing guitar, very loudly. This is to give them the challenge for the day, cooking various grilled meats at certain temperatures in 20 minutes total, which the men won by a single point. This is always exactly the way with this show. The end credits do state that the editing is done in such a way that things are shown out of order to create tension such as that. Later on at the dinner service on the men's team, Chino had to cook 3 risottos, or risottos as they call them, as he kept burning them all, while Carrie struggled to put together 3 Caesar salads for 1 table. Then on the men's team, they couldn't time their main meals to come out at the same time. And then between 2 of those meals, Brendan lied to Ramsay about whether or not he cooked a second sea bass, as he just let a cold one heated up go out. Ramsay told him in no uncertain terms that he'd be out instantly if he did that again. Before long, Ramsay pointed out that not a single main meal had left the men's team, and all of them were sent out to the kitchen, where the women called in to finish off their service. In the end, it was down to Brendan and Chino, both of whom were as bad as each other. But only one could go, and it was Brendan. Overall, there was lots of shouting, overacting, and plenty of effing and jeffing. And it's fantastic. Roll on next week. Okay, in a moment, we're going to have a look at some films. We're going to look at some new TV shows coming up. First of all, we're going to have a bit of music. We'll have Laura Branigan and Self Control. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now, in this little section, we're going to have a look at a couple of new shows that are coming up. A bit of TV news. But first of all, the first show I'm going to have a look at is Village SOS, which is on BBC One tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Sarah Beeny follows a passionate group of locals as they spend a year trying to rescue their community. When the residents of Talgarth near Brecon applied for a grant from the Big Lottery Fund to renovate a derelict mill, they had no idea what was in store. The last mill ground corn in 1946, but can a bunch of volunteers really turn its fortunes around? I'm beginning to wonder whether the Sarah Beeny bubble has burst. Property Ladder was great entertainment at first, but eventually just became the same old, while Help My House Is Falling Down got old really fast, as it didn't do a great deal different from the show which made her name. Village SOS is something new, but we've all seen rows of shops disappear and our shopping centres turn into ghost towns, but while we decry it, we're all still happy to go to big-name supermarkets and great big shopping malls just off the motorway, as everything's under one roof. It's progress whichever way you look at it. However, I'll give this a go and see how it fares. Also, it's a show that started last week, but I've not seen it yet. I've got Trolleyed on Sky One, which is a new sitcom set in Warrington in the fictional supermarket of Valco. Julie, Jane Horrocks, is the acting deputy manager who works along store manager Gavin, Jason Watkins, to whom she is romantically attracted. Andy Marcaddy and Kieran, Nick Blood, are the store's butchers. Katie, Chanel Cresswell, works on the checkouts and has a flirtatious relationship with Kieran. Margaret, Rita May, the oldest of the team, struggles to set in. Now, the clips and trailers I've seen of this so far haven't been at all promising, but for you dear listeners, I shall put all my fears to one side and try it out. As I say, I know that the first 2 episodes aired last Thursday, so I'm a bit behind with this series, but I might still be able to save you from the pain. Or possibly introduce you to a treat, you never know. Now, I'm also going to have a look at some TV news, starting with the news that it looks like Ideal is to be cancelled by BBC Three. Now, first of all, I'll mention that there is a Facebook page for this, organised by the writer Graham Duff. If you've gone to Facebook and searched for Save Ideal from BBC Cuts, and Graham Duff said on there that, as some of you may have heard, the BBC have decided against commissioning an 8th series of Ideal. The reason given was that the new channel controller wanted to make a clean sweep. It's a source of both pride and frustration that at the point of cancellation, Ideal was attracting its biggest ever audiences, its highest profile guest stars, and its best ever reviews. And the show is now being screened in more countries than ever before, from America to Finland and beyond. I just want to say a huge heartfelt thank you to everyone who's appeared in the show and worked behind the scenes over the last 7 years and 53 episodes. And a very special thanks to everyone who has supported the show and spread the word. We really wouldn't have got this far without you. It has been a truly wonderful journey, and to work with such a genuinely amazing team has been both an honour and a solid hoot. Now, in my view, Ideal is the single best programme on BBC Three. I can understand someone new wanting to make changes, and the man who's taken over is Zai Bennett, previously a controller of ITV2. But why ditch something that's popular? That just makes no sense. I know petitions have worked in the past to bring back great shows, so I've signed this, and I hope it works. Perhaps it could finally make the long-deserved first-run leap to BBC Two. Or maybe Danny Cohen could take it with him across to BBC One. Now he's the controller of that channel. Thanks to Graham Duff, Ideal has some of the sharpest writing on TV, and many of the jokes just come at you when you're not expecting them. I was also hoping to be able to eventually celebrate the 100th episode, as I had such an amazing time with the Flash Mob back in June for the 50th episode, which I mentioned on the show before. Now, I put a link to the petition on the DVD Fever Facebook page. So if you go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show, you'll be able to see the link on there, but you can also go straight to it. If you go to ipetitions.com/petition/SaveIdeal. Okay, I'll have a bit more TV news in a while. But first of all, we're going to have another song, well, just a very brief song, with Eddie Cochran, Come On Everybody. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now, having a little bit more TV news for you. First of all, I've got the news that ITV is to pilot a pay trial online. ITV has announced it is to trial charging online viewers for bespoke content and archive material from the new year. The proposed charges could come into play for downloading things from the channel's back catalogue of drama and for special webisodes of shows like Coronation Street. However, viewers will not pay to catch up on weekly shows on the ITV player. Chief Executive Adam Crozier has said the network is to diversify its revenue streams. ITV understood to be trying to establish what viewers were willing to pay for, and any trial could involve a one-off payment or a subscription fee. The trial will start privately at first, before being rolled out to the public. Don't know about you, but for me, there's hardly anything worth watching on ITV itself. Well, just ITV2, Val's Kitchen. I'm not going to be, well, I'm certainly not going to pay for anything, because it's bad enough when it's free. Also in the news, we've got the news that Torchwood's future is uncertain, says the boss of Starz, which is the channel that's broadcast on in America. Now, the Starz CEO, Chris Albrecht, has revealed that Torchwood may not be picked up for another season. Albrecht told the reporters at the TV Critics Tour that the sci-fi drama's future is dependent on the schedule of series creator Russell T. Davis. Torchwood is not one of the shows we went into thinking about a yearly return, he explained. It's about Russell T. Davis, because he has a lot of things on his plate. If Torchwood is at the top of the list, that will affect the future of Torchwood. Davis is currently developing a new drama series named Cucumber with Showtime. That was announced last month. However, the showrunner previously said that he was having second thoughts about leaving Torchwood. Davis is currently developing a new drama... He said, I'll quit at the beginning of every year, and then when I get to the end of the series, I love it again, he explained. So I don't know. It is time I moved on and did something else, but we'll just see how well Torchwood Miracle Day does. And Torchwood Miracle Day continues on Fridays on Starz in the US and on Thursdays at 9 o'clock on BBC One in the UK. Also in the news, Strictly Come Dancing return details have been confirmed. Strictly Come Dancing will kick off its ninth series with a double bill at the end of September, the BBC has announced. Following on form from the successful introduction of a launch show last year, the new bunch of celebrities, or is it really wannabes, will be introduced to viewers in early September. Bruce Forsyth and Tess Daly will host a special red carpet event, which will be recorded on the afternoon of September the 7th. The first live shows will then take place on Friday, September 30th and Saturday, October the 1st. Following the double bill, the live shows will then continue on a weekly basis. The BBC has also confirmed that the show will be broadcast from Wembley Arena on November the 19th. Details on how fans can buy tickets in this special episode in aid of children in need will be announced soon. The new series will conclude with a live final on December the 17th, which for the first time will be staged in Blackpool's Tower Ballroom, and even will be broadcast in 3D. Bruce's chin can just stick right at you and just scare the pants off you. OK, Yes, that's all the TV news for this week, and that's the show in general. Thanks very much to everyone who listened. And if you want to see any trailers or anything for the all the films that I've mentioned earlier on, and also the thing I mentioned, my podcast getting a mention on BBC's Click program, just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow, and everything's on there. But that's all for this week. So, as again, thanks to everyone who listened. Coming up, we've got the Aaron Matter Show. And to take us to the top of the hour, we've got Lou Bega and Mambo No. 5. This is 106.6. 106.6.